As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Shamrock. It's game week of Notre Dame, Ohio State. Joined as always by my co-host in Chicago, Matt Fortuna, and special guest this week. We teased him last week, Ari Wasserman from The Athletic. You can hear him on Stars Matter, pretty much anything Andy Staples does. He's a former Ohio State beat reporter for us, now covers recruiting on a national level. He loves a fillet of fish. He's a man of many tangents. So expect that on this podcast today. Ari, how are you? How are you getting ready for Notre Dame, Ohio State this weekend? It's a program near and dear to your heart.
Notre Dame?
Oh yeah, Notre Dame. You talk about them all the time on Stars Matter.
Anybody who, if there's any crossover to the Shamrock to Stars Matter, and I hope there is, knows that I've been pumping some sunshine up South Bend's alley a little bit.
I feel like I have to like bring you back to earth sometimes when we're exchanging Slack messages.
I think that it's going really well. I'm still coming to terms with the fact that Matt Fortuna has replaced me as the Ohio State beat writer this week.
For 1 week.
I'm very much looking forward to the game. And I think that this is a game that I wish, if I were the commissioner of college football, I would have on the schedule every year. I just think there's something special about both of those programs, and they're so close, and the fact that it's been, over 20 years since they've played is I think, a complete disservice to the entire sport. So the fact that we're getting this game this year is exciting, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing how it all turns out.
Yeah, you know, I think the commissioner of the Big Ten and the athletic director of Ohio State, both of whom have Notre Dame degrees, would agree with you. Notre Dame should join the Big Ten and play Ohio State every year. I think that would be a win-win for everyone. Thanks again for joining the show. You're our fill-in. We wanted Jack Harlow, who's going to be the guest picker on game day Saturday.
What's up with that?
He was unavailable, so we're settling for Ari Wasserman. Are you sat down? You had a story last week from Ryan Day's office. I believe you sat down with him last week. Big year for him. You know, the expectations are always high at Ohio State. They're probably higher than they've ever been in his era this year. And he jumps right out of the gate with a top five program. What can you tell us from your takeaways with Ryan Day?
You know, what's interesting is that a lot of coaches who get jobs have very different career arcs, because usually when a job comes open, that means there's a problem, right? And Ryan Day took over kind of in a tumultuous time with the way that things went down with Urban Meyer, but he didn't take over a program that was in trouble with the talent. They weren't losing games at a high degree. They didn't have to fix anything. So his career arc to this point has been no regular season losses for the first 2 years of his tenure. And then, you know, their first two last year came against Oregon and then Michigan, which is a complete disaster for Ohio State in year three. So it took him more than 2 years into his job to suffer a loss that people would be upset about. And it's not that they're not upset about losing to Clemson in the playoff in 19 or getting their butts kicked by Alabama in the national title game, but you can at least, as an Ohio State supporter, understand how that could happen. So for the first time in his young head coaching career, you have people who are upset with him. And not just upset with him over a regular loss, but losing the Michigan game, which is something that neither of his predecessors made much of a habit of. So, coming into this year, I think it's a very important year for him as a coach personally, but also a huge year for Ohio State because, you know, as I've said many times before, I think it's pretty remarkable how many times Ohio State has missed the playoff or suffered inexplicable losses in the regular season, considering the way that the roster is constructed. And, you know, I wrote a story sitting down with Ryan Day, as you mentioned, and there were people saying hot seat in the comments. So it kind of gives you an idea of like,
was it hot when you were in there? I don't know.
I mean, he has plush leather sofas that I sunk into very nicely. No, I mean, he's not, he just signed a massive contract extension. That's not reality. But the fact of the matter is the man's getting heckled in grocery stores for losing to Michigan in Columbus. And, you know, I think there's just a level of edge that he has because, like, listen, you're not supposed to lose that game. And I know it's a rivalry game and all the HBO special things that you can come talk about. But, like, they also lost to a team that wasn't nearly as good as them. And, from a talent standpoint, and Ohio State fans have a hard time coming to terms with that. So, yes, I think it's a very important year for him. If they miss the playoff again, I think it would be in, like the Armageddon of Columbus, Ohio. And the fact that it starts with Notre Dame in week one kind of adds to the intrigue of all that.
So they... Ohio State has lost games that they shouldn't lose, you know, and I think that like you look at some of Notre Dame's when they have been blown out by elite teams, like Clemson doesn't lose games they shouldn't lose until last year. Alabama just doesn't at any point. So like,
right.
Ohio State, like what happens when they lose? Like what happens when they lose to Oregon? Like Michigan, I sort of like put to the side because it was like a cathartic religious experience for everyone in Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. Like that was just, a total one-off. But the Oregon game, to me, like if I'm Notre Dame, I'm looking at the Oregon game. That's the game I look at and be like, all right, what the hell happened here? How do we replicate this?
And Ohio State's lost non-conference game. Like, the year they won the national title, they lost to Virginia Tech at home.
Right.
So like, it's not like they have a staunch, unblemished record of being successful with major non-conference games. In fact, I think they've lost quite a bit of them going back to the USC ones and, they lost a Miami one, you know, going back 15 years, 10 years now. It's been a trend. And the thing that was so tough for the Ohio State fans to swallow is that they typically don't lose games they're locked in for, quote unquote. You're always locked in for Michigan. You're always locked in for these big time matchups. And like, if you go back and look at Urban Meyer's tenure, that didn't happen very often. And they didn't lose any regular season games at all the last 2 years. So when it does happen is I think last year was kind of a, I don't know if I would use last year as a parallel to some of those previous losses, but last year they just weren't as good as they usually are. And we viewed them through the lens of being that good. They were soft as a team. They got blown off the lines despite the fact of the talent they had, and they had to reorganize their entire defensive staff as a result. So when you go look at Ohio State's deficiencies or losses, it's because of deficiencies that have been recognized by the staff and have been ignored until a catastrophic loss happens. If you go look at all the monumental changes that have happened at Ohio State from a coaching standpoint in the past 7 years, it's always been a response to a loss. And that loss is to been the catalyst of what is to come. Like when Ohio State won the national championship in 14, it was because their defense sucked at the end of 13. They got a new defensive coordinator and then everything was fixed. It's just, I feel like they wait too long to make necessary changes. They've been loyal to a fault to coaches. They've promoted people that shouldn't have been promoted. And the thing that I think that's the difference between Ohio State and a place like Alabama is that Nick Saban is uncategorically ruthless when it comes to the expectations, and Ohio State lets them slip a little bit sometimes. So, you know, this year, I think it would be bad news for Notre Dame because they're locked in. You know, they come off of a year last year. They have a new coordinator. They're paying $2 million to restructure the defense, and, like, they are very motivated to not be a repeat of last year's disappointment. But on the other hand, their defense stunk last year, and I don't know how much you believe Ohio State could fix in a one-off season. So there's two ways of looking at it.
Yeah, I just had images of JT Barrett in my head when you talked about loyalty and not making changes when you probably should have. That was obviously Urban Meyer's biggest weakness at Ohio State. I remember, I guess it would have been about 2 years ago after the 2020 draft, I wrote a column after Ohio State had, I think, two of the top three picks and just said, like, to your point, Ari, I think that guy underachieved there. I really do. When you look at the talent level he had, and I thought I was going to get killed by Ohio State fans for writing that. And they're all like, yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah,
How did we only make two playoffs under him?
Yeah. No, it's pretty remarkable when you look at, like, the conference they play in. And I'm not disparaging Penn State and Michigan and some of the teams that they beat. But, Ohio State is constructed like Georgia and Alabama from a talent standpoint. Now, those two programs have been a little bit ahead, a notch ahead in the recruiting rankings. But if you go look at the NFL draft production and then you compare that to what they've done as a success on the field as a team, it doesn't equate. It doesn't match. And like they missed the playoff, I mean, four times now or right. three times now, one of the two. And it's just like, how did that happen? Especially considering the fact that they rarely play games where a team is more or equally talented. And if you go back and look at Urban Meyer's resume from his 7 years there, I think off the top of my head, he lost 9 games. But if you look at the total number of teams that he played that presented that talent, or the talent was equitable, he probably only played 18 or 20 games where it was. So he's only a 500 coach against teams that were similarly situated. So, you know, Ohio State's very much padded its win totals, and their records are lopsided and all that stuff. But I don't know if you could say that this team has performed like an Alabama when they have faced teams that pose that talent issue.
Mm-hmm. So, like, what happens, like, when Ohio State doesn't play well or they're pushed, whether it be Oregon or even, like, Penn State, Nebraska a little bit mm-hmm. last year? Like, what happens? Like, what's the misfire? What's the disconnect between, like,
yeah.
a Maryland, like, where they just boat race you, or it's 56-3, or Michigan State last year, where it's 49-0 at half? Like, what's not happening in the games that are tight for us?
That's the number one question that everybody wants to answer, because if you all watch the Ohio State games where it's working, things are clicking, things are going right, you know, it turns into a 56-point blowout real fast. But then there's just certain games where there's dumb penalties and people are walking around with their heads down on the sideline and they just don't seem locked in. And I think getting them into that scenario means keeping it close early and, you know, punching them in the mouth in a way that they're not anticipating. You know, like if Notre Dame, for instance, they've got a very good offensive line, right?
Yeah.
If they come out and they run the ball down Ohio State's throat on the first drive and score, then all of a sudden you start to think, oh, wait a minute, maybe we're the same team or a lot of the issues that we had last year still exist. And then you get them in their head and the next thing you know, you got a close game. So, you know, what happens, I think, is there's a lot of sleepwalking that occurs at that program, which is something that Nick Saban would not stand for. There's sleepwalking losing to Purdue by a million and losing to Iowa by a million. But last year's team had major deficiencies on its defensive line and in its defensive game plan, and both Michigan and Oregon identified them and beat the crap out of them. Like, there's no other way of putting it. So, I don't know if there's one like major thing that I could be like, hey, this is what happens every time Ohio State loses, but they are not as invisible of a program as you would think they were based on what they trot onto the field every Saturday.
It reminds me of maybe a bad analogy for Michigan and or for Notre Dame and Ohio State fans, but like they remind me of like a better version of Michigan in that regard. Like I just until mm-hmm. last year, I just thought Michigan was a front runner. Like they beat up the teams they were bigger and better than, and the minute they fell behind in any game, it was like, goodbye, you're going to lose 3 games this year on that alone. You mentioned a little bit about the new staff hires. Don't expect everything to be perfect in week one, but to your point, like new O-line coach, new defense coordinator, all these are direct response to last year. What can Ohio State fans and Notre Dame fans expect Saturday night to look different for Ohio State schematically?
You know, from what I understand, schematically, it's not going to be all that different at all. You know, they've got some different wrinkles and positions that they're going to deploy in the secondary and stuff. But, you know, I think that Ohio State's number one issue really is two things. One is, can they just be tougher? You know, it's a football team and they just, if you go watch that Michigan game, I don't think that Cade McNamara had to make a single throw in that game to win that game. Like, I'm not saying he didn't complete passes. I'm saying there was no like defining moment where he had to make a play. They just ran the ball down their throat. And it's like, if you're Ohio State, that in that game especially, that's almost inexcusable. I mean, that's not almost. It is an excusable thing. So, you know, I think that the number one thing for Ohio State is that they have a very youthful defense with a lot of pieces that could be great. And whether or not they're going to be a national championship caliber team this year is going to depend on whether or not the guys like Jack Sawyer or JT Tuimoloau or Denzel Burke continue their rise into being stars. Because you know what the craziest thing about last year was, guys? And this is the first time.
Stars didn't matter.
The stars clearly didn't matter, but they didn't have they didn't have a single defensive playmaker they could rely on. Like, and when's the last time an Ohio State team had that problem? With the Bosa brothers and the Darren Lees and all the draft picks they had. It's like, who's going to make a play? And everyone's looking at each other like this, like, who's going to be the person who makes a play? So, like, is Jack Sawyer going to be that person? And, like, the thing I've always thought to myself is, like, of course assistant coaches are supposed to be there for developmental reasons, right? They're there to motivate and to put people in the best position. But, like, how much can Jim Knowles, who's making $2 million this year to fix this defense, do to make those people reach their potential? Like, it's almost kind of up to the players in terms of, like, whether they're that person or not. And if they have some of those hits on their depth chart that turn out to be who we think they should be, then Ohio State's going to be a very good football team. I don't know if Jim Knowles is going to come in and dial up a schematic defense. It's going to be like, oh my God, Vince Lombardi couldn't even imagine this. I think it's a matter of whether or not they're A, tougher, and B, some of their young, talented players turn out to be who we think they should be.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
So, like, whether they're tougher or not, like, if for Notre Dame to win, they have to really dominate both lines of scrimmage, which still might not be enough because of C.J. Stroud and Jackson Smith and Jigba and Marvin Harrison and Trayvon Henderson. Like, give me some insight on, like, why Stroud is not just, like, great, but Heisman great, number one overall great. Like, he's – because I think even last year I remember watching the Minnesota game and thinking, like, all right, this guy's good. And then they sit him because of the sore arm, sore shoulder. And then he comes back and just is like on fire the rest of the year pretty much. Like what's the game plan on him? What's the
starting point? Yeah, I think that the thing about C.J. Stroud is that, you know, you compare him directly to Justin Fields.
Yeah.
And Justin Fields was, I think, the most physically gifted athlete, at least skill position player, that Ohio State has had in the last 10 years. Now, Braxton Miller was a freak in his own right, but he was more of a make a people miss type person. But I don't think that C.J. Stroud is physically as gifted as Justin Fields was from just what his body is capable of doing. What I do think he's very good at is, A, he's got a precision arm, and he can hit a dartboard from 100 yards away, it feels like. But he sees things in a way that you can't coach. And if you go back and you look at a lot of his highlights from a year ago, you know, he'll throw balls into windows that other quarterbacks wouldn't even see were there. And I think that you can rely on your arm to put the ball exactly where you need it to be to find those windows. And I think that's what makes him such a unique NFL prospect. Because to me, I think there's always been this disconnect, guys, of, well, we're going to judge somebody based on where they fit on an NFL draft board, and we're going to try to contextualize that into how good of a college player he is. But there's always been a huge distinction between great college player and great pro. I mean, there have been people that have had mediocre college careers that have been great pros and vice versa. But I think C.J. Stroud is a professional quarterback, maybe the most professional quarterback that Ohio State's had, including Justin Fields, in the recent history. And, you know, Ohio State hasn't been a program in general that has a lot of quarterbacks excel in the NFL. And I think it's because if there is a safety coming down and a linebacker under, he can find that one hole that might be 3 yards wide and put the ball through it right on rhythm. And of course, Ohio State has the receiver talent to make it work. You know, I think that the fact that Ohio State had potentially 3 or 4 first round draft picks at receiver on the roster with him last year, or in total of his career, is going to certainly help him. But I do think that I buy into his next level ability to pass the football. And that's what Ohio State's kind of been offensively. Not to ramble here, but, you know, back in the Urban Meyer era, Ohio State was a run first team. You know, I don't think people realize, you know, it, from they were a spread team and they brought the, you know, they had the Devin Smiths and the Michael Thomases of the world, but they were a smash the ball out of the spread down your throat team. And they have become this finesse team almost that can throw the ball for 600 yards a game, but can't get a first down on the ground when they need one. And I think that's another thing that's going to have to shift for them to be to win a national championship, because at the end of the road, Ohio State's offense, for as good as it's been, you know, to give your readers some hope or your readers and listeners some hope, go look at their offensive numbers in some of their bigger games. It hasn't really equated to the 70-point, you know, thrashings that they put on Maryland. So, you know, and I don't know, you guys are the experts with Notre Dame, but like if their defensive line and offensive line are awesome, and I think they are, right?
I think they will be. We'll see.
Yeah. So if their lines are awesome, that makes me want to take the points.
Yeah. All right. That's what I want to get into. Doesn't 17 and a half seem like
down to 17? Down to 17.
Okay.
It seems too big. High. It seems too high. Now, from a gambling perspective, not that I know anything about that, but sometimes you look at spreads and go, whoa. That is way too high. And then the team wins by 30 and you're like, oh, okay, Vegas knew something. But sometimes the spreads are just too high. And like, I think this should be a competitive game. Now, Ohio State's going to be juiced up. Like they want to put last year in the rearview mirror. And how do you do that? By getting an emphatic win over a top five opponent on your home field in week one. But like, you know, Marcus Freeman's clicking the pen. What's the spread? Smirking. You know, they got something to prove too. And this is a team that's made the playoff multiple times as well. So, you know, non-conference games are supposed to be close. They're supposed to be fun. And if this game turns out to be 41-10 or something, I think I would be surprised by that. I think Notre Dame has... Here's the thing that we talked about when you were on 4-6 with A&B. Rest in peace.
R.I.P.
Shamrock victorious.
Yeah, it was a race of like 4-6 with A&B and the Shamrock. Which one would last longer? Yeah. Frickin' Landis.
We went from 4-6. We went to A&B from A to B quicker than 4-6.
Yes, you did. You guys were the last standing team podcast at The Athletic.
Damn straight.
Hold the belt up. Yeah. Man, that's sad. We had a good thing going there, man. But you talked about, oh, I was really going somewhere with that. And
it's really funny to see you rattle right now because
I'm hurt.
Our friend Adam Rittenberg texted me earlier this week asking if me and Pete have the biggest bromance at the Athletic. And I was like, Bill Landis is gone.
Now that you're lovered and stabbed you in the back.
And Bill were very, very bromantic. And now Bill's gone and you're all in your feelings right now in the Shamrock, which is great. Like maybe Bill will rejoin us and that will be a Shamrock bump for Ari. I don't know.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, you know what? Thanks for talking for 30 seconds. I remember my point. Your point with Notre Dame has always been right. That like they have the guys up front and on the defensive line and like those brute force guys that can do it, but they've struggled with the skill position players. Right. So the difference in this game will be, can Notre Dame own the offense and defensive lines enough to neutralize the stark advantage Ohio State has at the skill position? Because Jackson Smith, the Jigba, like is getting hyped up right now, guys. He might be, I think he is better than Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. Like that to me is like, I can't believe I just said that. You know, we're talking about two top 10 picks, but the guy is insanely good. And you got Marvin Harrison Jr., who I think is going to have a major breakout year this year too. So, you know, and Trey Henderson, their running back, is also going to be a pretty high draft pick. So, like, can they neutralize that? Does Notre Dame have the corners and the safeties to keep up athletically with Ohio State's passing attack? And I think that's probably going to be the difference. And to me, as an outsider watching them play in the playoff and in games like this, has seemed to be the thing that has dampened their chances of winning some of these games in the past.
Yeah, they don't have killers on the outside. And it's like we had Bruce Feldman on our podcast and we were talking about this, and he felt like, you know, getting into a shootout with Ohio State is like trying to shoot three-pointers with Steph Curry. And I think some of our listeners were like, what the hell is he talking about? But like I feel like Notre Dame is like built like they're a basketball player with a really good mid-range jumper, but can't shoot threes. And Ohio State is like a little bit more like the Golden State Warriors. And it's just like, you can beat, it's not that you can't win the game. Mm-hmm. It's just that the advantage you have, you just, CJ Stroud just needs to chuck it. Whereas Notre Dame's advantage is like, you need four defensive linemen and two linebackers to fill the right gaps. And you need five offensive linemen and your tight end to block the right way to spring a run. Like, Ohio State just needs one thing to happen for a big play. And I think Notre Dame needs like this concert of eight or nine things at once to like have an explosive game.
And that's kind of been like Ohio State's Achilles heel to some extent too at times, because like, if I had to bet, I bet you Ohio State will score a touchdown in this game of 60 yards or more. But also, they've had so much insane talent in the past that they've relied on it so much that it's hindered their ability to be progressive in terms of being imaginative. And if you've watched Ohio State as much as I have over the course of the past 5-10 years, they beat people because they're more talented, but they don't out-scheme people usually, which at times has really caused them issues. I mean, because when they played Iowa that year, I think it was at 16 or 17, like Iowa saw something in their defense and out-schemed them and threw four touchdowns to a tight end in that game, and Ohio State couldn't figure it out. And like Ohio State's offense, like if the offensive line gets blown off the ball or they don't do a good job protecting, you rattle CJ Stroud. It's like you're basically hoping that Jackson Smith and Jigba can catch a pass, you know, a slant for 15 yards, make somebody miss and run 70 yards. And like, that's not the position you want to be in either for sustained, consistent offense in a big time top five matchup. So it's kind of good and bad, because it's just been something that they've relied on too much in the past.
I mean, I don't know if you were there. I covered the Ohio State's opener last year, which was on Thursday at Minnesota. And, you know, yeah, Notre Dame's much better than Minnesota. Minnesota had an awesome running back who kept mm-hmm. them in the game until he literally blew his Achilles out and couldn't yep. play anymore. But to your point about Ohio State having a 60-yard touchdown, that was C.J. Stroud's first career game. Ohio State's five touchdowns were 71, 38, 56, 70, and 61 yards. And they had a 32-yard scoop and score fumble recovery on a sack. Like, they're going to make big plays. It's going to be a big play offense. I think the spread's too high, in my opinion. Again, like, I'm not a Vegas expert. 17 seems a lot, especially when the over-under is only 59.5, because that, to me, indicates, like I could see, I don't know, could I picture a 48-31 game with Ohio State, I guess, breaking even there? Yes, I can. I have a harder time seeing a complete blowout with Notre Dame not getting some of theirs offensively as well. And the other, I mean, my question, I guess, if Ohio State's a 17-point favorite over Notre Dame, how much of a favorite are they going to be over every other team they play this year?
Well, they're double-digit favorites in every game they play this year. So
well, this has got to be the smallest, right, outside of Michigan?
I'm sure Michigan's probably like 10. But yeah, this is a pretty big spread. And the funniest thing about it is that it's grown. Because wasn't right. it 16.5 or 16 when it opened?
I thought it opened, it was like 14.
It was, it was under 14.
Under 14, so people have been betting it up. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things where the game could be 38-20, and it could be a competitive football game. Because, yeah, you know, like, under. But it could be, you know, that's, so it's like 17.5 is like so much to wrap your mind around, but it's like Ohio State also could be winning 31-20 in the fourth quarter after right. scoring another touchdown to expand it to two scores in the middle of the third. It'd be a highly competitive game and still cover the spread. And a lot of times too, I've noticed with Ohio State games that go that way is they have a very good, like that Minnesota game is a perfect example. If you remember, like at halftime, weren't they losing?
They might have been. They were a live dog in that game. I think me and you were touched about that.
Yeah, they
that.
Were a live dog. Yeah, I think I paid my mortgage that month.
By the way, that Minnesota finished number three defense overall that year, and they still got gashed up and down.
Yeah, but did Ohio State end up winning by like 25 or something?
It was
like
45-31, I think. And
okay.
I don't know what the line was on that. Probably a little bit more than 14.
Because Ohio State's done a very good job of punching somebody in the stomach when they thought they were in the game, and then that punch turns into three or four more touchdowns in a very short amount of time, because they can score very quickly. And then the game looks like it is, like it was a blowout when it wasn't. Now, here's the other thing that we have to, and I don't know the number off the top of my head, but Ohio State's been very bad at covering the spread. Like, they just aren't a very good covering team. And whenever they play Penn State, they're always like a 13 or 12 point favorite. And it's like, why is the spread this low? And then like they play grab ass for three quarters and they win the game by nine. And it's just like, okay, well, Vegas knows how to kind of how to diagnose that. So I think that the spread is probably indicative of the talent advantage. But as I've said three times already, I don't think the talent advantage is the only thing that comes into play here. And I think that Notre Dame, you know, has a really good shot at keeping it close. Now, the one thing I would consider is when Luke Fickell came to Ohio State before he became the greatest coach of all time last year, like he came to Ohio State his first year at Cincinnati, I think. Right. It was either his first or his second
first
year.
First or second, yeah.
And are we allowed to use profanity on this podcast?
Oh, yeah.
He shit his pants in Ohio Stadium. I think the score was 33 or 38 to nothing. He was tense all week. He kept his players out of interviews. Like, this is Ohio State. Like, he treated it like it was the Michigan game. And when his team walked in to that stadium, they were tense and they didn't play well. And the thing that I'm very curious too is that Marcus Freeman, as we all know, isn't a former Ohio State Buckeye who, you know, is like very handsome and has a six pack and wears nice suits and is always smiling in a very, you know, that smile that I can't do it. I'm not as handsome as him. But like, will he be cool, calm, collected and coach this game like it's a regular game? Or is he going to get crushed by the Ohio State-ness of it?
Because emotionless was the word he used this week.
Yeah, yeah, he should be, because it's very easy to be overwhelmed by the emotion that comes along with returning to the place that you played, especially considering how important the Ohio State identity is to most of the players that come through the program. So, you know, Luke Fickell, I think if he were to come into Ohio Stadium this year, would be much better at it. But like, this is his second game he's ever coached.
Right.
This Freeman. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, like there's that you have to consider too.
But and, I just looked at that season. That was Luke Fickell's second season. They had just upset UCLA the week before on a Thursday. That Cincinnati team went 11-3. They won their next nine games after losing 42-0 to Ohio State. So I think that kind of illustrates your point perfectly.
And they didn't even have that game was a complete dismantling of Cincinnati in every facet of the game. They didn't have a chance from the second that game started.
And that was defensive coordinator Marcus Freeman, right?
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
That was before Cincinnati was the Cincinnati they were last year. And like Sauce Gardner hasn't even had a pass attempted on him in the NFL so far.
They were on their way, though.
You know, they were on their way, but they weren't what they are.
I'm just saying, they went from like 2-10 to 11-3 that year, and two of those losses were to Memphis, who won the conference.
Yeah. I think Notre Dame is way further along than that team was. But
right. There
is that certain sense of like Marcus Freeman is this recruiting god. You know, he works out with the players. He's more accessible than Brian. All the great things that I've said and you said about him in the offseason. It's like when he puts the headset on in Ohio Stadium on Saturday night, and Ohio State's like got foaming at the mouth because they were embarrassed last year. Like, are they going to be able to not crumble underneath that pressure? Which they might, they very well might, but it's certainly a question that you have to consider in this game too.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
What is the perception of Marcus Freeman around like the Ohio State, whether fan base or program? Like, I feel like he's rattled their cage a little bit, which is not, I don't know how wise that is for Saturday night, but you know, when you have to pick fights with Ohio State in recruiting, because they're getting the guys you need to get. But like, do people sort of see it as like, oh, former Buckeye, welcome back, or like, you've taken some shots at this university since you've been at Notre Dame, like, we're going to stick it to you?
I think Ohio State fans are very sensitive. And like,
yes, the thing I gathered that.
And I think that like the thing that Marcus Freeman said that I probably wouldn't have said was that academic comment.
Yeah.
And the other comment he made was, because like the whole thing with Ohio State, and it seems kind of, you know, cultish at times, but it's like the brotherhood, right? Like everybody, if you're a Buckeye and you cut your arm, then Buckeye blood is going to come out of your arm. It's like when he said the thing about not making
Thank
the same
God,
mistake.
One of their colors is scarlet, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be otherwise. gray blood. But when he said that thing about not making the same mistake twice, people were just like, what the? It's like, I get you're the coach there, but they're like, you're a Buck. Like, how dare you? You know, and I think that the thing about Marcus Freeman is that the Ohio State fan base resents the fact that he was never their defensive coordinator, because they've had, like, Marcus Freeman should have been Ohio State's defensive coordinator on that field against Alabama the year that they lost in the title 2 years ago, and not at Notre Dame. You know, and I think that like Ohio State fans have constantly been wanting to hire this guy ever since he was at Cincinnati. So the fact that they didn't ever make the attempt, or they weren't able to close it, is something that bothers them. And now to see him as a rising star at a major program like this so quickly into his coaching tenure, it's kind of like the Brian Hartline syndrome a little bit, of just like, well, one of ours came back and he's an assistant coach now and recruits 9 top 100 receivers a class. He's the best Buckeye I've ever seen. Like, that could have been Marcus Freeman. And Marcus Freeman would have been blocked at Ohio State by a coach who probably isn't leaving anytime soon. But, like, if Marcus Freeman is successful at Notre Dame, and then Ryan Day takes the Patriots job in 3 years, like, Marcus Freeman will be Ohio State's number one target, I would assume. So I think that they are annoyed by some of the things that were, like, kind of, like, traitorish that, you know, from their perception that he said. But I don't think the academic thing was all that offensive. I just thought it was a fact. You know, it's just like, yeah no shit. Like, yeah, they have a better school. You know, so I don't know if they're rattled, but he certainly has rubbed them the wrong way.
I'm still not sure the context of that particular quote, because he walked back on it a lot, or at least said he would, you know, that wasn't exactly what he said. But I did find the irony of that happening during the Notre Dame baseball team's program World Series run against Tennessee, when they made t-shirts saying Catholics versus classless in reference to Tennessee. Very, very ironic. I'm sure we'll see some of that.
Well, the thing that I hate the most, and I despise it, and maybe I'm the problem and I'm okay with it, and here comes like a rant.
We didn't come here to play school.
I don't give a shit how good of a school you have. This is a football podcast. It's like, that's the thing. Like, it's like Michigan says it all the time. Notre Dame says it. I think Northwestern says it. Just like, we know you have a good academic institution. We're not playing school. Yeah. It's like Harvard's got a better school than you, Michigan. We're talking about football.
Well, I talked to Bobby Carpenter for the big Marcus story that I did today. And he described like the linebacker room when Marcus joined as like meatheads in a good way. And he was talking about Trestle's like blocko for life. And he's like, I didn't care about that. I'm like here to chase girls, play football, lift weights, and get a 3-0 so my mom stays off my back. Like, that's that was the vibe there, which is great. Like, go for it. Everyone can have a different different approach.
I know it's a news flash to everybody listening and to all of us, but the football players just want to go to the NFL, man.
Yeah.
They just want to play football and they want to get paid. And you know what? I would too. And, you know, I'm not saying academics isn't important. And I know that it is a main pillar of Notre Dame's existence. And I know that when you go there, you're better off for life. I know they are the Jay-Z of colleges or whatever that is.
Wow. Someone listens to our pod.
Yeah, but it like makes sense. Okay. That makes a ton of sense. Great recruiting strategy and a great way to talk to young kids. But we're not talking about which places have the best schools, because that's not what people care about. People care about football, and I think you have to take into account what school does about who you can get in and who's on your roster and how you can recruit. Certainly, it plays a factor, but don't lose a football game and go, yeah, well, we have a better academic institution. It's like, okay, great. We're not competing at academics. We're competing at football.
That's why I remember being on the flight back from the Notre Dame Alabama 2012-2013 title game. Saw a Notre Dame buddy of mine on the plane. He goes, yeah, there's an Alabama fan next to me on the plane. And he said, I can't wait to brag my boss about this game that we won. He's like, that's right. Your boss is a Notre Dame grad. I guess that's a dig after losing by 20.
I mean, guys, and I don't know, like, I'm not like the pillar of education. Like, I went to the University of Arizona. So, but it worked out okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I mean, I don't know, like my entire take on education is kind of just like, unless you're going to be a medical doctor, a a lawyer or an engineer or something where your actual education comes into play. Like it is what you make of it, right? Like, you know, you're telling me, Fortuna, that your amazing Penn State degree is the reason why you found success in this field? Or is it maybe because you busted your ass, got internships, got a job at ESPN early on, learned everything on your own, and like made the best out of your situation?
I mean, I knew I wanted to go to communication school. I knew I wanted to go to a place that was big and had a big network. And I hope that I had the tools or developed the tools to take advantage of that to get to where I did.
But do you think if you went to Arizona, you wouldn't be here?
I'd be a lot tanner. I probably wouldn't be in the Midwest. That's another point. Now that we do what we do for a living, and again, I grew up in New York, I went to Penn State, I had a great experience, but now that we like travel to campuses and get to see other parts of the country, every single time I'm on the West Coast or in the South, I'm like, wait, I could have gone to school here? Are you kidding me? What the hell was I thinking?
Yeah, I think it's like, I'm not trying to be mean towards the school I went to, but it's like not like Arizona is some sort of mecca of journalistic production. I didn't like take Jeff anything Goodman. I learned. Yeah, I didn't learn like, I mean, Shane Bacon worked with me at the newspaper and he's like a handsome on television golf personality. Like we've had success. It's like, but like, I don't credit the University of Arizona education for any of my professional success. I worked my ass off. And I feel like if I would have gone to ASU or Penn State or Ohio State or any of the other schools in the SEC, and I was given the same opportunities with internships and student papers and all that stuff, that I would have worked you make the best out of your situation. Right. So, you know, and it's like really hard to get into Ohio State, I think. Like I never applied there, but like I heard now it's like a really hard school to get into.
A new development.
I thought we weren't talking about academics.
No, I know, but it's just like funny because like that's the thing that everybody always says, and it's just like, okay.
You think that's bad. I mean, think about the Varsity Blue scandal at USC where a lot of these celebrities' kids got like it came out in court documents like we don't want our kids going to Arizona State. We're gonna buy our way into USC. Like you talk about a rival, a shot, like I'm going to jail so my kid didn't have to go to your school. And at the end of the day, to your point, it probably won't make that much of a difference if you're not that smart. Like,
I just feel like all my friends that I met in journalism school don't even do journalism.
Right.
They have journalism degrees and one works for Spotify as like an app developer and makes a shit ton of money. And another
producing this podcast.
Another one, you know, I don't know. I just, my whole point is like, if you send your child out of state to another 4-year institution, that's just a state school, and they're not going for like pre-med or law. It's like, you're just throwing your money out the window because the opportunity in professionalism is based on how you make your experience, not the curriculum in the class of my journalism 101 one class that was like, use three sources in a story. I don't even use three sources in a story half the time.
All right. I got to get you on recruiting this because,
okay, let's do it.
We've talked Marcus Freeman recruiting, God knows I've written 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 words on Brian Kelly as a recruiter. I want to read you a quote from a signing day press conference here at Notre Dame and get your reaction to it. Cause I think this
you're going to make me upset. Is this like a shtick now?
Yeah, I'm going to make you upset.
Okay.
But this is a question I asked Brian Kelly, and it was about if he could take Notre Dame recruiting and elevate it another level. And the answer, this is part of the answer. I won't read the whole thing.
Okay.
Since I've been here, if you look at the average rankings, we're anywhere from 5 to 15. We're going to fall somewhere in that range because that's a line we can't get over based on what our distinctions are. That line is going to keep us between 5 and 15. We know where we're going to fall. We're going to continue to recruit the right kind of kids here. But to answer your question to the detail, we want longer-term relationships, yada, yada.
Do people do this still? Do people do this?
We ought to put this on video and just use your cutout right now, your physical reaction that the listeners can't hear to that quote.
I can't stand complacency for people who make $8 to $10 million a year. It drives me insane. Like what the head coach just said to you in an answer in a press conference, we can't be number one.
Yep.
I'm with you.
So, you know, whether or not that's true or not, I can never have a six pack. Doesn't mean I don't go to the gym. I don't know. I disagree with that. I mean, I think that Notre Dame has inherent challenges that are always going to exist. And we talk about it every time we talk about it, and we'll say it again. There isn't a lot of talent in the state of Indiana, and they have stringent academic standards to get in. That said, how many of the five-star prospects that Ohio State has signed, since it's their opponent this week, in the past 9 years would Notre Dame not have taken?
We may or may not have talked to some current Ohio State coaches about that.
Yeah. And what did they say?
It's about like 85%.
Take.
If you looked at, I think it was the Henderson class I asked about. I can't remember, what was that year? Was it 2020, 2021, that class?
20, I think.
Yeah.
It's basically like, tell me how many of these guys could get it at Notre Dame, fit at Notre Dame. And it was like 80, 85%.
Maybe. Okay, so, and again, that's hard.
Very high.
It's hard to cut the board at all.
But it wasn't
Dame,
50%. It wasn't
30%. There are plenty of players that are very, very academically gifted that are good at football. And I almost feel like it's this like weird thing of just maybe it's like the movie like Blue Chips or He Got Game or things like that where like really good athletes are just bad academically, which is just not true. There are a lot of very, very good high school football players who can have the test scores to get in. And if you want to know how good Notre Dame can recruit, why don't you go down their offer list? I bet you that they probably offered 85 of the top 100 players in the country. So now the problem is you got to convince these prospects to go to a Catholic school and to be in this environment. And again, that might whittle your list down to from 85 to 70 or 60 who are willing to do that. But they're not signing 100 guys a year. They need to find 25 guys. And the right person has already shown, and I know that Keon Keeley and some of the stuff that's going on with Bowen right now is an uncomfortable reality to it, but they've already dramatically improved in less than a calendar year in that regard. So they go out and beat Ohio State, or they make the playoff again, and you have this charismatic coach who knows how to talk to kids and sell how great Notre Dame is to these prospects. They can't sign a top three class. They can't. I don't buy that. And I hope that Marcus Freeman doesn't buy it. And I hope the fans don't buy it. I hope the fans always demand more because they're paying them for it, you know? So I don't know. What's your take on it? Do you think they could sign the number one class in the country?
No, I don't think they can sign a higher ranked class in Alabama, but I think they should sign top five classes regularly.
What about in 2033 when Nick Saban's not the coach there anymore?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Like it's like
generally speaking, I'd say yes to your question. I don't think they'll be better than Saban because Saban's the best to ever do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, philosophically, I say yes.
Could they win? Yes. Now, this is a tough question to ask because of the context of the moment. But could Notre Dame theoretically win 8 battles a year that resembled what they did with Keon Keeley?
Yes.
Could they win 8 national battles a year? Because that's really all it takes.
You got to be like a top 100 guys, you got to be 8, 9, 10, I think.
Yeah, they can get 8, 9, 10.
Yeah.
I think that is a national championship roster.
Are they going to get 5 stars? Probably not. But top 100 guys, yeah.
But if you get 5 5 stars or 5 top 100 players, and I'm going to say something that you're probably going to use against me in the future, but I don't know how much of a distinction that there is. And there is, because 5 stars are the top 33 players in the country. But there is not a major discrepancy between 5 5 stars and 7 top 100 players. Like if somebody asked you, would you rather have 8 top 100 players or 5 5 stars, what would you take?
I got to see my roster, but I'd probably say the 8.
I think that it's a discussion. So if it's a discussion, that means it's up for debate. And, Notre Dame, like if you go look at their class right now, which I probably should have just pulled up before this started, but they have, I think they're bordering on at least 10 top 130 players, right? Like they're in that realm. It's not like I'm not asking them to go from 30th to third. I'm asking them to go from 7 to 3, which the head coach of Notre Dame should strive for. So
yeah, they have 8 players in the top 120.
That is a very solid class. Now, I know it stings because there's going to be a realization, and it's happening now, that when you are forced to recruit nationally and you go after 5-star prospects that also have offers from Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, Florida, USC, and everybody else, that winning those battles at Notre Dame is going to be increasingly more difficult. And Keon Keeley's probably going to end up, a Florida prospect is probably just going to end up at Alabama. So it's like that is the reality of it because Alabama is so dominant in that field. But Nick Saban's not going to coach forever. You have a bright young guy who wants to be there for a long time. I think incremental improvement is crucial. They're not going to go from 10 to 1 in 1 year, and they're not going to finish in the one class this year, but they've improved.
Oh, yeah. So they've right improved. Now, even without Keeley, if they just kept the class together, didn't add anyone else, and they probably will add two more four-star guys. But if they just kept the class together, it would be higher rated than the best Brian Kelly class in the 24/7 ratings.
Sure.
So, yeah, they've improved.
And their average player rating right now is 92.55, which is a playoff class.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, if you add into the mix, too, that there's going to be – is Notre Dame have a hard time getting transfers because of yes. the – is it, like, really tough for them? So that might be
very difficult. Yeah.
That might be tough, but they might be like one Joe Burrow transfer away from winning a national title with a class like this 4 years in a row. And like, I just like, I know that it's really hard to kind of see through. And honestly, I rub a lot of people the wrong way because I'll tell you, like, these classes aren't good enough when it's not, and people don't want to hear that stuff. But like Notre Dame's class right now, if you do it 4 years in a row, you add a few pieces in the portal if the things come together the right way. Alabama has a down year. There's absolutely a path to playing for a national championship for this program if they do it the right way.
Yeah, I mean, I remember to Pete's earlier point, it was actually Marcus Freeman's like public introduction as a Notre Dame employee, as a defense coordinator. It was still like in that Zoom world where I think it was the February signing day of 2021. Brian Kelly gives a statement.
Yeah, it was a
doesn't take.
Yeah, but didn't take questions. You remember why that was, Matt? Do you remember why?
Yeah, because you wrote about how that Tyson Ford's
and how Brian Kelly didn't contact him in recruiting, and Marcus Freeman like wowed them. They were going to lose a top 100 defensive lineman to Oklahoma who was basically committed because Brian Kelly wasn't involved in the recruitment. Marcus Freeman gets hired. Boom, the kid is back at Notre Dame. I wrote that.
Brian Kelly also told the staff, I will fire you if you talk to Pete Sampson during that saga, which is a fact. And we saw how that all worked out.
Well, he is kind of a shit story.
Pete Sampson's still here, by the way. Yeah. But I mean, I remember that thing.
I wore that badge of honor with pride when I was. Go ahead.
Brian Polian and Mike Elson come out that same day, and I forget who said what, but it was one of them said, hey, would you rather have a top five team or a top five class, as if this is an either or proposition, which it's not, because they're the only one pretty much who isn't in that one group, but not the other when you look at it year to year. And one of them also said, well, out of the top 50 rivals prospects, we're only allowed to, or we can only seriously recruit. And I'm paraphrasing here. I don't remember what the exact number was, or maybe it was 30 of the top 100. It was a small number to which I would say, okay, then you have more resources to devote to a smaller pool of prospects. You should absolutely be getting more than you are. And I mean, I know we joked about this earlier on the show about education and diplomas, and I generally do agree. I do think there are a handful of schools in this country where you could walk out of there with that insignia on your resume as a graduate of and be able to get any job in the country. And I think Notre Dame's one of those few schools that has that reach. So I do think you're selling something a little bit more while you're at Notre Dame. And I also think Marcus Freeman understands that because, again, that was, I believe he was the last guy to talk during that Zoom press conference. And I'm thinking in the back of my head, this guy must be looking around thinking, what the hell did I get myself into? This is Notre Dame. Like, I did whatever I wanted at Cincinnati. Like, I'm thrilled to be able to wear this ND polo on my chest and walk into a high school and have everyone coming at me asking for a discussion about their players. And I again, to your point, Ari, like, nothing frustrates me more than highly paid millionaires coaching unpaid labor, complaining about how hard their job is and how they can never do it. And I think Marcus Freeman has completely flipped that narrative on its head at Notre Dame.
You want to hear a fun stat that I just added up while you were talking? I was listening to you, but I was also doing math. There are 30.
It's hard. I don't believe this.
Well, it was rudimentary counting, but I was 32 five-star prospects in the 2023 class this year. Okay. How many has Notre Dame offered?
I feel like I should know this.
No, it's not. It's an obscure 25. It's an obscure stat. Like, it's not an easy.
25?
30.
25.
Oh, 30. Wow, that's a lot higher than I thought.
So if that, you know, and again, maybe some of those offers went earlier on. You know, they reported offers on 247. I don't know if they're all committable at this point or if all those kids would get in. But they're involved with all of these guys. You know, it's not like they're like recruiting in the periphery somewhere and they're trying to find the Catholic boys from whatever high school they can in Wichita. Like, they're in on the David Hicks and the Peter Woods. And you know, you get the right guy in place to sell that thing. And it's like, I know there are people who graduated from Notre Dame that are listening to this podcast and go, this asshole doesn't think that my Notre Dame education is important. Of course it is. Sell that. That's what he's trying to do, right?
Right.
That
right.
insignia, that network. You said you went to Penn State because you wanted to go to a place that has a vast network of people who can help you excel in your field. I can't think of a better university in the country than Notre Dame that has a right. network of people who are proud of where they went to school. And like, that doesn't mean that I care what you learned in Chem 101 on your freshman year midterm, because it doesn't matter at all to your life. But there is an academic circuit or a pool of people that went to your college that are willing to help you out. And that, to me, and I don't think it's unique to Notre Dame. If you go to Michigan or you go to Ohio State or A&M, which my wife went to in Texas, and you know, you think all the people who, I mean, networks are networks, but Notre Dame has a strong network. It's got a great education. It is literally, like, I go to Rutgers and I laugh because it says birthplace of college football everywhere. It's like, I go to South Bend, and when I'm there, I feel like I can hear the Rudy theme music in the back. It's like, it is college football. Now, there are some different things about it, like the dorm situation and the facilities and all that, that have, you know, I mean, the facilities are great now, I'm assuming, but like, it is different than every other place in the country. And it's like, I don't know if I'm going off on a tangent here, but like, have you guys been to Europe before?
I have.
Yeah. Yes.
Have you been to the Greek islands or like Santorini or anything like that?
Done like Cinque Terre.
Okay. So you've been to Italy and all that. Yeah. Okay.
I ran into Muff McGraw and the Notre Dame women's basketball traveling party while in Rome.
That's really crazy. Enough. When in Rome. Yes. When in Rome, right?
When in Rome.
But so I came up with this thought process like 5 years ago. I was on a family trip with my parents and brother in Santorini. And I was on the cliff there and looking at all these white houses. And I'm looking around being a dumbass American. And I'm thinking, this is the only place in the entire world that is like this place. You know, and we vacation all the time in America, right? Like, you go to Palm Beach, you go to Malibu. I mean, there are certain intricacies about American cities that make them different than others, but they're all kind of the same. You know, you got your 7-Elevens and your Walmarts and your strip malls and your Five Guys, and you have the beaches that are you know, Florida beaches are sometimes indistinguishable from one another. Notre Dame is Santorini in college football. And like, that you should give to Marcus Freeman, because it's like, yeah, you can go to any other place that has all the same suburbia restaurants, or you can come to Santorini and go to the one place that is unlike any other place in college football. And I think that is a very powerful sales pitch that could be done the right way. And honestly, people talk about academics as a thing that gets in your way, but if you do it the right way, I think you can use it as an asset. And like that, when you start untapping that, that's when I think you have a really good shot of achieving something. And I think Marcus Freeman, in the public comments that I've heard him say, seems to have tapped into that to some degree.
Yeah.
The Jay-Z and the Santorini, right? Of college football.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't really think about conflating those two things, but I could see how that could work.
But it's just like, I use Santorini because Santorini is unique in what it is. You know, and when in Notre Dame is
that way. Like,
it is.
You know, I see the, you know, behind you, you've got pictures of all the, like, I don't know all, but many of the road stadiums you've been to. Like, when I go to other campuses, some of them are unique, but none of them are like Notre Dame.
Every Big Ten school outside of Northwestern is exactly the same.
Yeah, they're all the same.
Duke was the only one where I was like, you know, this is very Notre Dame-ish. Duke.
If I dropped you in the middle of Illinois' campus and then I dropped you in the middle of Indiana's campus, do you think you would know where you are?
No, 100%.
I would, because I've been to both too many times, but yes. I mean,
no, you know what I mean. Like, if you just drop somebody. It's the same thing that happens when you say, like, if I blindfolded you, Pete, and I dropped you in suburbia in any city between Dallas and Columbus, Ohio, along that route of driving, do you think you would know what city you were in?
No, there'd be a Fairfield Inn next to an Olive Garden and all of them.
Like, and they would all look the same topography-wise. It's all indistinguishable. You drop me in the middle of Notre Dame's campus, I know exactly where I am. And I think that's an asset.
I couldn't agree more. I'm with you. How are the Filet-O-Fish in Wichita, Kansas Dallas?
I wonder. I bet you the Filet-O-Fish in South Bend is a top seller. Yeah. Because if you know
I bought one, which I haven't been compensated for, I'm just saying.
Oh, that's right. Let me Venmo you right now. I forgot. I owe you $10. I said I'd pay you $10.
Yes.
Yeah, you have to send me your Venmo after this. Okay. I will pay you. I'm not a man who. But the reason
you
why
could have just sent him a free one with your hookup.
The Filet-O-Fish actually was created because of Lent.
Oh, all right. That makes sense.
That's why it's even on the menu to begin with. And as a Jewish man myself, thank you to those who created a need for this. But yeah, no, it's a. The Filet-O-Fish probably hits real hard in South Bend. It turns.
Nerdame still blames you for the AstroTurf, to use a Seinfeld reference.
Yeah, I know. AstroTurf! yeah, but I'm excited for this game. I hope that it's close because we all like close games. And if Notre Dame wins this game, I think it is I think Notre Dame's comes at a perfect angle here because if they lose, then everyone expected it. You know, okay. Go on with your season. If you play a close game, you lose. You know, your season's alive. You honestly still could make the playoff in the modern climate with the way that it's changed. You win. Boy, that's a statement.
Yeah, that is. Because that way I get questions like, all right, what if they win? What if they lose? Like, if they lose, like, the narrative's the same. But you have, I think, a more likable head coach and your recruiting is better. So you're better off than this result before. If you win, it's like the Bush push never happened. Matt Leinart falls down. Notre Dame beats USC in 2005. Like, this would be the biggest Notre Dame win since 1993 against Florida State. I think without question.
Yes. And there is the potential, too, that Ohio State is not what we think it is. So they could annex that power the way that Michigan did last year without having to beat an Alabama-like behemoth.
Yeah,
and then you can change that with the recruiting.
The billboard that this would be for Notre Dame would be invaluable because, like, they would suck up all oxygen in every college football discussion until they lost. Like, that's how it works with Notre Dame. Like, when they're really good, they're kind of the only story until they lose. And that's what would happen if they won.
To Fortuna earlier, like, join the Big Ten and play Ohio State every year. Isn't that like a ratings? Is that ratings nirvana?
Oh, God. I mean, yeah. can you
imagine? Is it going to be the highest rated non-playoff football game of the last 5 years on Saturday night?
I want to know, will it beat like what Ohio State Michigan was last year? Like, can it get to 15 million? I think if it's a good game, it will get to 15 million. Like, 10 million is huge. I think there was only one game over 10 last year. The Iron Bowl was right at 10, and it was Ohio State Michigan, which blew past 10 million. If this is a great game, like, it's going to be off the chart. I think it will go over 15.
Because I'm trying to look at the schedule. Am I forgetting any? Are they competing against anybody that night?
I'm looking at
Or Utah, Oregon, Georgia's Utah, during Florida. The day. Is Utah, Florida at night, though?
Yeah.
Okay.
Guys, there is Washington, Kent there is State. Some, so let's.
There's some counter some counter programming.
Yeah, no, but Alabama, Utah State is the other night game. That's on SEC Network. They've got the floor. So I think this is going to be a great product. And, you know, there will be some people who tune into Wisconsin, Illinois State on FS1 during the same window. But, you know, it's going to be fun. You know, it is. Yeah. Well, you know, you're looking at one. So,
all right. Hey, before you are a former Columbus resident, mm-hmm. as two guys going to Columbus, I've passed through one time driving back from Virginia Tech, stopped at Land Grant. It was great. Like,
where are you guys staying?
What do I need to hit? I'm staying downtown.
I think I'm by the airport. I need to look that up. I booked it kind of late.
Oh, I thought you guys were like me and Landis get conjoining rooms when we were on the road. So is conjoining a word? That's how I always ask for it. I want a conjoining room. So as a Columbus resident, there's two ways I want to do it. Do you want to experience the Ohio State footballness, or do you just want good food? Because like there's
I'd
all these
good food because we're gonna get the footballness Saturday.
Yeah, I'll take the football Saturday. Give me good food, nice beer garden,
Land Grant Brewing is like the best beer garden in Columbus. It's awesome. Okay. You should check that out. But there's some really good Chinese food there, and I said this to some friends. Who were offended by it, but the best Chinese food I've ever had in my life is in Columbus, Ohio, but you have to get in a car and drive there. So like people are like, well, why would I go? I'm in Columbus, Ohio. I'm downtown. I'm in the Short North. That's where single Ari had a lot of fun in his 20s down that street. There's a lot of great bars. And if you're staying downtown, you can walk to a bunch of places that will be super packed and lively. Columbus is a good city. You know, I didn't appreciate how fun it was when I lived there until I left, but it's a great city with a lot of places to eat and stuff. But if you want to go off the beaten path and get in your car and just be a glutton.
I'm not a volume eater, Ari. I'm more of a quality over quantity. So.
Yes. Well, this Chinese food will knock your pants off. Yeah. I'm telling
you. I haven't found too much good Chinese food in the Midwest, because which is Chinese where I've food most of my is, professional life. But
Chinese but food fun, is a Big Ten campus. Fun, it's very fun indistinguishable.
fun fact, and probably a very awful alternate history for all the Notre Dame fans who love me so much. I was initially hired by ESPN to be the Ohio State beat writer. I literally had a deposit on an apartment in Grandview looking straight at the horseshoe. It was all ready to go and something happened.
We could have been best friends. It could have been me and you and not me and Bill.
I know. In my first year there would
who
have
would
been
I be podcasting with then? Like, would I just know. Be by myself?
You'd my first year there the would have been the Luke Fickell 6-7 disaster that led to Urban Meyer, which would have been awesome for a young person like me who had no idea what the hell he was doing to cover. But anyway, like a lot of things at the Worldwide Leader, something happened with someone else behind the scenes. They said, you're not going there anymore. They gave me like a week while I weighed on pins and needles, and they said, how about Notre Dame? And I said, perfect. And
me a job. Yeah.
Got there Thursday. Yeah. And I quit my internship. So I was kind of in limbo there. Got to South Bend on Thursday, and on Saturday, I covered a 6-hour lightning delay and a loss to 3-9. South Florida team.
And you'll remember that for the rest of your life. It's so funny you bring that up, because my first year on the Ohio State beat was the Tatgate stuff. And I was 21 and I just graduated from the prestigious University of Arizona. And I would have thought, like, knowing what I know now about how the sport works and, you know, what we do, like, at that time, I was like, I'm not cut out for this profession. I can't do this.
Well, that was such a big scandal, don't you remember?
Big scandal of all these amazing, like, incredible things that were happening behind the scenes. And ESPN, the magazine, had this huge How Deep It Went cover, and I knew nothing. I had no perspective. I was just crapping my pants for the first 6 months of my tenure there. And it's like, I wish I could go back in time with what I know now. And like my skill set, and cover that again.
Just say NIL and it
would
be over.
I wouldn't even say NIL. I wish I could cover it without the knowledge of NIL.
All right. So I started on Notre Dame in 2001. 9 months later, George O'Leary got hired here. What was a bigger one? Tattoo Gate or George O'Leary at Notre Dame?
So George O'Leary lied on his resume.
Yeah. And got fired like a week later.
I don't think that's that big of a deal.
I figured you'd say that. Yeah. I don't think selling... getting free tattoos. Well, now it literally is legal, but for selling...
You know Terrell Pryor didn't even get a tattoo?
What did he do? He sold
his own bull rings.
Yeah.
It's like funny because he's like...
What's funny is that's what got Jim Tressel fired, who's going to be on this week.
He lied to the NCAA, which I would have been like, why are we talking about this? Like, if I were him, I'd be like, yeah, they sold their own shit. Sorry.
I know it was only year two for me, but I'm sorry. And we talked about this on the last show, I think, but the Teo catfishing scandal tops both those.
Yeah,
we're still talking about it 10 years later.
That's untoppable for the
I know
rest of
we
time.
Are getting into, I'm sure you guys talked about this a ton on your podcast already, but I watched that last weekend. And sorry, we're at 1:05. So if you don't want to talk about this again, these guys, we're going to talk about it. They can drop off. we've given them the hour. But I was so young in my journalism career at this point. There were so many things about that I had not recognized until I watched it. I had no idea that there was this discussion or thought process of him being in on it or him being anything other than a victim. So when I watched this the first time, I didn't even remember that. I just thought people were making fun of him for getting catfished. I had no idea about the sexuality stuff and all the things that he went through. And man, I got to tell you, I never met this man before in my life, but I truly am sympathetic for him. And the way that he handled this whole thing, you know, it was a PR nightmare at the time when you're 21, but what do you expect? The man he's become, and I have all the love in the world for that guy. And whatever he pursues in his life, I hope that he gets everything he deserves, because I think that the reason why this happened to begin with is because he was a good person.
Ooh, like, alternate history part two, as we're talking about 2012, Notre Dame versus Ohio State in the national championship game, if Ohio State had not put itself
on probation. Thinking that. And Notre Dame would have won.
Okay.
Notre Dame would have won the national title that year if Ohio State didn't put itself on probation.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I think...
That 2012 Ohio State team was not good.
No, well, that's when I was like, holy crap, Urban's going to be really good because he keeps ragging on this team and they just ran the table in his first year there.
Their offense was Braxton good, do something with poking him with a stick. Dude, run. That was that team was special because they found a way to not lose, but they weren't a good football team.
Look, Notre Dame was dominant defensively that year. I would think on paper Notre Dame would win that game. Like, if we're gonna go down that rabbit hole, like, are they playing it a week after Teo found out the whole season was a lie, and is he gonna play as he did?
The whole thing I didn't like about the documentary was they painted Notre Dame as this unbeatable, immovable object.
They were not.
That Alabama team was awesome. I know that like Manti went through some shit. Like I'm not saying they didn't lose because of him.
No, I did an oral history on that team a few years. It was my first year at The Athletic, and I talked to Chuck Martin, head coach of Miami, Ohio, who was the OC on that team. And he said, on the record, we were closer to finishing 3-9 that year than going 13-0. Alabama was that much better.
Oh, yeah.
Was not.
No, they were so good. And they made it seem like this poor guy had the weight of the world on his shoulders and the reason why they lost that. That guy could have come in at feeling better than he's ever felt in his entire life, and they would have lost by 30. Like, there was no way that they were going to win that game, which was the beginning of the Alabama dominance. But, you know, that – can I ask one other thing about Manti Te'o? Now that I got your guys' attention, you know more about it than me? Yeah. There's no way he picked Notre Dame because he went to church one night and decided that he was going to go to Notre Dame instead of USC. What happened there? That's not what happened. I don't know what happened. So that's not what happened.
I have like part of another story, and I don't know how true it is, but it was fed to me at the time or around the time. I specifically remember I was with my aunt. This is literally right after like, I'm going to Columbus. Oh, wait, no, you're not. Reroute to Notre Dame. So like it's days before the game. I'm looking for a place to live. I look in an apartment complex not far from campus. The woman showing us around is very nice. And she said, oh, where are you moving to town for? Oh, I'm going to cover Notre Dame. She goes, oh, my cousin Manti plays on the team. I go, oh, okay. And I didn't know Manti personally at the time, but obviously knew who he was. And I was like, yeah, that's such a big deal when they got him. You know, everyone thought he was going to USC. And again, I'm not. She said he was his cousin. Now, as we saw through that documentary, he had a lot of cousins that weren't exactly his cousins. That was just kind of the way.
Polynesian.
It was.
That's a Polynesian culture thing, right?
But yeah. She like, said, I'm his cousin. And when I said I was surprised he didn't go to USC, she said he wanted to, but Pete Carroll made his mom cry. And she left it at that.
Oh.
Interesting.
I also heard that he was silently committed somewhere like to UCLA at some point, too.
Yeah, that was, I think Bruce has maybe mentioned that before, like that Rick Neuheisel said, because Robbie Tomo is his best friend, receiver, was like, you know, kind of a low 3-star recruit, was committed to UCLA. And then when Manti told UCLA, I'm not coming, they were like, well, sorry, Robbie doesn't have a spot here either. Manti commits to Notre Dame. And it was like later in the day, Notre Dame took Robbie Toma as well, who turned out to be a good slot receiver for Notre Dame. But yeah, I think that this 10 years, well, I guess that's more like 13, 14 years after the fact, why he ended up at Notre Dame. I think all of the above was true. Maybe Pete Carroll did make his mom cry. Somebody did say something to him in church. But I thought the documentary did a very good job of depicting like the culture Manti came from, where like you're like,
But you know his parents were very involved in his recruitment to some extent based on the personalities of the people. 100%. So, you know, I just never really understood like why a Mormon would get a revelation from God to go to a Catholic school either. That didn't really add up.
And his visit, they didn't even talk about his visit. Lose at home to Syracuse. He wears jorts. They're throwing snowballs at the team. The own fans are, because they're so bad.
The team was
awful. And that was his visit there.
I think he left at halftime, was like what he like went back to the recruiting lounge at halftime.
So
he missed the snowball fight with the students throwing snowballs at the team. Like,
but I guess we could close with this. He was awesome. He was awesome. He was an awesome football player.
Incredible college football player.
Yes. Just,
I mean, some of the hits that they put in that documentary, like I remember those games, you're just like, holy crap. Like this, whether this translates to the pros or not, I did not care. Incredible college football player. And like, I
think incredible person.
Yeah. Just like the doc did a good job of like Notre Dame really embraced everything about him. even after the catfishing stuff, like he can still come back to Notre Dame and has many times. And like, nobody's making a joke about him at Notre Dame. Like, that's like, you're our guy.
Yes. And I can understand how that could happen to him at that time too. So anyway, I just wanted to say to all the Shamrock listeners that it's been a lifelong dream to be on the show, which is what everyone says whenever they're on anyone's shows, but it's true. And it was good to fill the void of team-specific podcasting again, because ours is dead. So
we will not spike the football in your face, but we can't let you out of here without a prediction.
Oh.
Ooh.
You know, I actually haven't even made one, so I'm just going to go off the cuff here. I think Ohio State's going to win 34-24 or something like that.
Okay, so game.
I think it'll be a good game.
The under.
I don't know, like, with Ohio State, I feel like they've always been the hardest team to predict. You know, there are certain games where I'm like, God, this is going to be close, and they win by 100, and there's certain games where they should win by 100, and they don't. But I think it's disrespectful to think that Notre Dame wouldn't play them close. Like, you know, I don't know if they have the athletes to last all four quarters, but I think the first half should be close, and then hopefully in the fourth quarter will be too. But I don't think this is going to be a 52-10 scenario by any stretch of the imagination. What are your predictions? Have you guys given one yours?
I have not yet. I'm still like working it through. It's like, it's the least important thing I do that I spend the most amount of time agonizing about.
Well, the funniest thing about it too is that, like, as sports writers, our job is to chronicle what has happened. And like, fans have expected us, like, they're like, you were wrong. It's like, no shit. Like, if I was right all the time, I'd be in Vegas in my backyard.
How boring with this?
Floating on my hundreds.
I started doing Live on the Line Stadium's betting show every Friday, and I have to give like a lock of the week. And so last week, week zero, I said Northwestern +7 first half. It hit. I've gotten some messages across multiple different platforms and texts from people I haven't heard from in years saying, thanks for that. I tailed you. Appreciate it. Which makes me scared to death about what they're going to say. No comment. Which makes me scared to death about what they're going to do when I inevitably lose a couple here. And I'm getting threats out.
I'll tell you guys one thing. I've paid services money for picks every week. I listen to the college football podcasts with predictions. I know a lot of people in Vegas, a lot of my close friends who live there that are in on with the Sharks and the Sharps. And the reality is nobody knows what the hell they're talking about. There isn't somebody that you're going to tail and go, yeah, this guy went 83% this year. It's just, it's an unwinnable proposition. And if you go into it with that mentality and you try to win 60% of your games one year and win some money, but you're not going to go 8 out of 10 all year. So that's the reality of it. And I don't care how much you know about the sport, how much you analyze, what turf they're playing on, who's out, which offensive line matches up in the rain, all that stuff, it just kind of goes out the window, especially at the college level. Because I'll tell you one thing, Fortuna, I was all over Nebraska last week.
Well, that's your fault. You dug your own grave with that one.
And I will go to my grave knowing I was right, and then Scott Frost kicked me in the nuts with that onside kick.
Yeah, that's what he does, and you got to account for that.
And you got to account for that. I know. So I'm the sucker.
All right.
You know, you sound like Brian Kelly.
I think this is a great place to end the show.
We can't let him out on that.
I'm a sucker.
You just ended sounding like Brian Kelly saying, I'll never have the number one recruiting class because it's too hard.
No, I'm going to keep trying, bud.
I'm going to keep throwing money at this problem.
Yeah, no, I'm never going to stop. Yeah.
All right. Well, Ari, we appreciate you coming on. I'm bummed that you're not going to be in Columbus and we can't do a Shamrock 4-6 A and B mashup podcast. But Matt and I will definitely we'll take a picture with Landis in the press box on Saturday
and send it to you. Bill. By the way, I'll go. I'm not printing it. I know Pete's got to write in and print. I'll say 42-31 Ohio State. I think it's going to be a good game.
Cool.
I'm sort of in that mode too. So I will. I'll have my prediction on Friday.
All right. I'm going to bet my mortgage on Notre Dame +17.5 now. Thanks, Matt.
Go for it. Good luck to you guys. I know you have young kids. So, all right,
guys.
No, that's a wrap for the Shamrock. Ari Wasserman, join us. Matt Fortuna in Chicago. I'm Pete Sampson in South Bend. We will talk to you. We'll have one more podcast later this week. I'm going to go with Ari's arch nemesis, Ralph Russo, on Friday. And then we'll do a podcast over the weekend, too. Matt and I will be in Columbus for post-game reactions. So until then, thanks for being with us on the Shamrock.